You are listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston. Chapter 35, Brenora. Everything was madness after the Lady Matrice hit the floor. The girl delivered the message and then collapsed to the ground in a fit of laughter, eyes empty and staring as her beautiful cheek pressed into the dirty stone at their feet. Everyone rushed forward. Thrick, several of the guards, Varys, even Brenora took a few steps towards the prone damsel. Everyone, that was, except Wren. Wren ran for the still open door.
"Stop her!"
Brenora yelled the moment she felt the tugging in her mind that was Wren's movement, but by then it was too late. The cell they had been keeping her in was small, and there were too many people in the space. Bodies pressed together, guards pushed and tripped over each other as everyone reached for the girl who might as well have been smoke. Wren slipped through the crowd like a salmon swimming upstream.
"Move!"
Brenora shouted, throwing the guards out of her way as she tried to get to the door, but it was no use. By the time she was in the hall, Wren was out of sight, around the corner, and at least 20 yards ahead of them. She could feel the girl in her mind, running down the halls, searching for an escape.
"Follow me!"
she bellowed over her shoulder, not bothering to check and see who obeyed. It was strange, this feeling inside her head, knowing where Wren was without seeing her, understanding what she wanted without hearing her. Trevok had tried to prepare her for the sensation, but there was nothing her lieutenant could say that would have accurately described what she was experiencing now. It wasn't that she could read Wren's thoughts, more like she understood her intentions. It was as if Wren was another part of her, and Brenora knew her now just as well as she knew her own face or the calluses on her hands. And because of that crystal clear understanding, Brenora knew one thing for certain. Wren would not be stopped. She would tear a man in two if he stood in her way.
"This is all your fault," Thrick said from beside her as they sprinted down the hall and skidded around the corner. "There was a plan. You should have talked to me before binding the girl."
"Your plan was cruel and unnecessary,"
Brenora spat, struggling for breath.
"And you were the one who left the door open."
They turned yet another corner, and Brenora sensed as much as saw a pale scrap of fabric disappear out the window.
"There!"
she cried, and redoubled her speed, in time to see Wren sprinting over the roofs and vaulting over the gate, disappearing into the mercurial streets of White Silver. The queen slammed her fists into the wall as she stared out at the city, feeling the girl switchbacking her way over roofs towards her goal.
"You've lost her. You trusted her, and now you've lost her. Our best source of information,"
Thrick chided from beside her elbow. Brenora wheeled around to face the man, teeth bared, voice dropping into a growl.
"It is because of that trust that I am now your only chance of finding her,"
she said, stepping forward, pushing Lord Blue back into the wall.
"Now what?"
panted Seraphina as she pulled to a stop just behind Brenora. The queen turned to face her friend.
"Now we go hunting."
The city of White Silver was a maze that ignored gravity. Pathways wound around cliffs and turned into tunnels. Public streets magically became private gardens that also served as roofs for businesses and homes. It was insanity to Brenora, but it made perfect sense to Wren. Having the woman in the back of her mind, scaling walls and flying over roads, was as confusing as it was helpful. Wren soared over the city that clearly belonged to her, as the rest of them desperately ran behind, caught in traffic like tourists on the street below. They tailed their quarry to the edge of White Silver, to the wall that marked the beginning of the Dimmock slums. The afternoon sun had turned the white walls of the People City gold, transforming White Silver into a glowing crown floating on the sea. But down this alley, the shadows stretched, and the world turned black. It was cool and quiet. The energy of the city was gone, and the street was still. They stalked along the avenue, tense and silent, Brenora's eyes focused on the lone door built into the wall.
"Is she in there?"
Seraphina whispered, looking up and down the street, shoulders hunched with misgiving, hand traveling to the saber at her side. Yes, Brenora said, tilting her head and examining the chipped paint on the door in front of them. Warmth beat behind that door. Love and laughter, food and heartache. She felt Ren's terror of losing what lay behind that door and her relief to be in its embrace again.
Should we charge in?
Varys asked. No, Brenora replied, resting her fingers against the wood. She closed her eyes and felt her mother tuck her hair behind her ear and smelt the hay from her long-gone barn. This is a home, she whispered, then raised her hand and knocked. Chapter 36. Rita. Rita had always lived around large crowds. The mess hall of the farm she had been indentured to had been far larger and far louder than her kitchen. Still, at dinner, she had to marvel at the noise of her table. What was even more incredible was how well it worked. It was easy to assume it would be chaos. With 12 children, it often was chaos. But tonight, everything was as perfect as a boat on calm waters. Honor and faith helped the little ones to their chairs. Wisdom and integrity set the table. The twins practiced counting as they waited. It surprised her how much pride she took in moments like this, how much joy she felt over the smallest accomplishments that were not even hers. Look at them, she whispered to her husband on the shelf. Look at what we've made. The door banged open, the whip-crack noise commanding everyone to freeze. Ren stood in the door. She looked like a cat that had been dipped in tar and run for its life. Her eyes were wide and wild with fear. Her shift was sticking to her skin with salt and sweat, and her hair stood at ragged angles. She stank of fear.
Jethro, what is wrong?
She said, gently taking Ren by the arms. Are the children all here? Ren panted, eyes darting from face to face, lips moving in a silent count.
I think so,
Rita replied, turning to do a count of her own.
Nizelle's found me,
Ren said, the words jerking Rita's head to face her.
What?
He's found me. He knows about you. All the memories she had borrowed from Ren, all the nightmares she had brushed from her hair danced in Rita's mind as her breath shook, and she looked into Ren's wild eyes.
How?
Ren shook her head. You have to leave. Rita, you have to leave. You have to take the children and go.
I can't,
Rita said, her own memories fighting to take the place of Ren's. There was the farm her and Brekkus had worked so hard to leave. There was Ren struggling to push Brekkus down the street in a wheelbarrow. There was her husband's battered body stretched across her table.
We can't leave the docks.
Please, he's coming. He will come here, Ren begged, her voice sticky with tears.
No, Rita shook her head. How would we live? How would I work? How would we eat? How would we be safe?
Rita! Ren sucked in her breath and winced away as Rita released her arms, fingers coming back tacky with pus and blood. She took Ren's hand and gently turned her forearm over to see the red, slippery dragonfly newly burned into her skin.
Jethro, what have you done?
She breathed before a knock sounded at the door. The room froze. Everyone too afraid to breathe.
Is it him?
She whispered. Ren shook her head.
He wouldn't knock.
Again they knocked, followed by a woman's voice, deep, beautiful, and commanding, a battle song urging the soldiers forward.
Ren, open up.
Ren shut her eyes tight, pulling into her body, and Rita's thoughts flicked to the mark on her wrist.
Hide,
Rita whispered.
I can't.
Run,
she pleaded.
I already did.
Ren, the next people that come through this door won't be knocking, the voice said.
Ren looked up at Rita, asking with her eyes what to do next. The mother pulled back her shoulders and turned to her children, their eyes terrified and shining. In her own language, she said,
You must do exactly as we say. Run if we say run. Hide if we say hide. Do not fight. No matter what happens, don't fight. drop to the floor if the time comes.
When she was done, she squeezed Rin's hand, and the girl went to the door. She stood aside, and in walked a queen.
Chapter 37. Rin. They have nothing to do with any of this, I swear it, Rin said, standing between Brenora and her family. She was trembling with a combination of fear and fatigue, but she would not, could not, collapse. She had fire coursing through her veins. She could summon the strength to protect her home.
Rita squeezed Rin's shoulder, and her words traveled through her fingers and into Rin's mind without the soul healer having to move her lips.
Don't be an idiot, Jetto,
the words said, before Rita stepped around Rin and declared,
Children, it seems we have guests. Integrity, wisdom, please find chairs for our visitors. Faith, honor, take the babies upstairs.
Faith started gathering up the children, but Honor stepped forward.
No! No! She's ours, Mummy! He said in Manon, before turning to the queen. You can't have her!
Honor, listen to your mother, Rin said, her voice a knife's edge of warning.
No! She can't just take you! Honor yelled.
Silence, you foolish child! Rita spat in Dimmock. A fight will mean nothing but death for us. A conversation could save all our lives. Do as you are told.
We mean no harm to your family, Brenora said in an overly loud voice to a tense and silent room.
We just came here for Rin. Taking Rin would be harming our family,
Honor growled, jutting out his chin in defiance. Rita glared at Honor. Honor glared at Brenora. Brenora looked to Rin, and Rin could not look at anyone because the room had started to swim in front of her eyes. In her vision, the floor tipped to one side and then the other. Distantly, she heard gasps and cries, and Rin knew she must be falling, but there was nothing she could do to stop it. Her body had carried her from Altair to a prison, through a binding, past a startling revelation from Nazelle, over rooftops, to her home, and it would go no further. However, her knees never got a chance to hit the floor. Hands, warm and firm as stone in summer, cradled her elbows, and gray blue eyes looked at her with concern.
Rin, are you all? I am so sorry,
Trevok mumbled in her ear.
Seraphina, could you come in here, please?
Brenora's voice called out, cutting through whatever Trevok was going to say, as the crowd around Rin bustled her to the table. Soon she was sitting in a chair, and Seraphina was at her side, placing fingers on her wrist and forehead.
She's dehydrated and famished,
Seraphina tisked to herself, before looking at Rita and asking,
Do you have water with just a pinch of salt, and maybe some bread?
What, you did not bring your own? Very rude to show up to a home empty-handed,
Rin said, as she lulled her head back in her chair.
Fila, shh,
Rita chided, and the next thing Rin knew, Choice, Rita's four-year-old daughter, was pressing a glass of water into her hand. The room was silent as Rin took a few tentative sips, her swallows of liquid almost as loud as the boards of the floor squeaking under nervous feet.
My papi was a carcurador,
Choice suddenly interjected from Ren's side, gazing up at Seraphina with a wide and enchanted smile.
A what?
Seraphina asked the girl with cautious kindness.
A carcurador, Rin repeated. It literally translates to healer of the body. It's a physician of sorts. It's like what you do.
Shall we sit?
Rita asked, attempting to move the conversation past her husband. They all settled around the table. Brenora, Trevok, and Seraphina on one side, with Varys lingering by the door so as not to warp the floors. Rin, Rita, and the children pressed together on the other. Rin could feel Brenora in the back of her mind. She could feel her pity as she watched 12 children trying to fit themselves onto two laps. She could feel her niggling, wiggling shame as the queen put together what she was about to ask of this family. Rin could even feel her mind desperately grasping at some way to start this conversation, as anxiety made her mouth go dry.
Where is he? The father,
Brenora finally asked. You have not earned that. You do not get to ask that, Ren snapped, before Rita placed a hand on her wrist, holding her in place with light fingers, even as she was fighting not to fly apart. All right. What questions have I earned the right to ask? Brenora breathed. Ren squinted her eyes and pursed her lips. I suppose you have the right to ask me anything you like. You own all my secrets now, but you do not own theirs.
Jato,
Rita hissed. She's right, mommy, Honor said from Ren's left, crossing his arms and leaning away from the table, mirroring Ren's posture. Brenora took in the sight of the two of them and let out another long sigh before trying again. Perhaps I should catch you up on what has happened in the last few days.
Since you betrayed, arrested, and imprisoned me, Ren clarified with a cold smirk.
Brenora glared at her new disobedient servant and bit the inside of her cheek.
We were sent to Altair by an organization whose purpose is to monitor activity along the rifts. We were supposed to accomplish certain tasks in exchange for aid for Durandir.
Like find the necklace.
The gem within the necklace, yes, along with other things.
Brenora nodded before going on.
Prince Zithril is not happy about how we left Altair. Apparently, we absconded with his fiancée.
Brenora let her words hang in the air as Rin felt a smile creep over her lips. She should have known Zithril would not let something like this stand. That man was probably threatening war and secretly working with pirates on a rescue plan. Of course, whatever he was planning was pointless now that the binding was in place. Even still, warm gratitude rushed out of her chest to her toes.
Jato, you're marrying a prince? Rita gasped.
Not anymore, Ren replied, holding up her marked wrist. Yes, it seems the prince might have overplayed his hand there. We believe he was hoping to give you some sort of status as a form of protection. Instead, he turned you into a bargaining chip. Currently, some of the members of the organization that enlisted our help are attempting to leverage your safe return for Zithril's cooperation. We felt like this was less than fair, and at least partly our fault. Ren scoffed at the queen's lackluster admission of guilt and threw her gaze up to the ceiling.
So now I'm your bargaining chip.
That's not why, Brenora started, before letting out a groan and saying, All right, it's your turn. How do you know the man who wiped Lady Athena's mind? Was that the man that you were bound to before?
Yes, Ren replied, eyes fixed on the ceiling.
Is he Dimrosh, or just Dimmick?
To the best of my knowledge, he is human.
He couldn't be, Seraphina interjected. He'd been working with Lithrel for over 100 years.
I said, to the best of my knowledge, he is human. Maybe he is human. Maybe he is Demic. Maybe he is Kinnikat, here to wreak havoc and ruin my life. All I know is he is dangerous,
Ren said, leaning forward to rest her skull on the table, rolling her head side to side, enjoying the pressure of the wood. She was so tired.
How is he dangerous, Ren?
Seraphina asked, and the sincerity in her voice made Ren's eyes start to sting.
I was very young when I met him.
She stopped. Her tongue felt too thick for her mouth. Rita was the only one who knew this story, and after years of not speaking it out loud, it was hard to know where to begin. How much of herself did she owe these people? How much was she required to give? How much could she say in front of the children? She sat up and tried to begin.
I was born into less than fortunate circumstances. My mother is what?
A whore? To her knowledge, no money had ever exchanged hands, which made her mother what?
Desperate, lonely, scared, broken.
Ren stopped and then pushed herself forward, waving her hands through the air to dismiss that part of her history before it even began. She is not important to the story. The point is, Nazelle, who we met earlier, came into our home and befriended my mother
and then he befriended me. He saw me. No one had ever really seen me before. Her voice trailed off with her mind, lost in the feeling of finally being found, finally being accepted. How good it had felt to be young and lifted up, to be told that she could be more than what she was. She blinked her eyes and found a spot on the wall to stare at as she pressed on. He told me that if I would pay him with a family trinket and be bound to him as his apprentice, he would train me. I was young, 11, maybe 12. I had no idea what a binding was, but I wanted to be what he told me I could be, so I said yes. It was not until after the marking that I even understood the kind of agreement I had just entered into. And it was another few months until I fully realized the kind of apprentice he planned on me being. A thought thief, Brenora said, her steady alto voice pulling Ren forward in the turbulent sea of regret and trauma. She nodded and swallowed down her tears before continuing, I took to it quite naturally. The mind just made sense to me, and I've always been good at being overlooked. I think that is why Nazel picked me. He saw my talents before I even knew what they were.
You were bound,
Trevok said, speaking for the first time since breaking her fall. He leaned forward, looking at Ren as if he was trying to divine the truth in her eyes.
How have you avoided him this long? How did you escape?
I broke the binding, she shrugged.
No, you did not. You could not,
Trevok said, shaking his head. And his disbelief was a knife in her heart.
Yes, I did, she insisted.
She wrinkled her nose and glared at the young wizard till he turned red.
It is impossible to break a binding. That is the whole point of a binding,
Trevok said, shaking his head and rubbing his eyes like an overworked and bemused father.
It is not impossible because I did it.
How?
I don't owe you that answer, Ren spat.
She did not owe him her research. She did not owe him the scar above her heart that had once been Nazel's mark. She did not owe him the story of the knife or what she had to do to create it, or the years she had spent planning her escape. She owed him no proof, and she would give no answers that he did not earn.
All you need to know is that breaking a binding is not a process I would want to do twice.
I'm sorry. I meant no offense,
Trevok said, holding up his hands.
I only meant that it is a little hard to believe.
Ask her then, Ren interrupted, flinging a hand at Brenora. Ask her if I'm lying. That's what this means, isn't it?
She asked, turning to the queen and brandishing the new mark on her wrist.
You get all of me now. My honesty, my loyalty, my service, my body, my mind. You get it all without even having to ask. So ask her if you need to know for certain, because I am too tired to try to convince you tonight.
Brenora's mouth hung open, gaping and grasping for words that would not come.
I didn't understand, she started to explain, but Ren cut her off.
She had more important things to do than listen to this woman grapple with the consequences of her actions.
Come with me,
she pleaded, turning to face Rita.
If I go to Durandir, I could bring you with me.
Rita shook her head and smiled. Tell me, Giotto, she asked. Would they have welcomed us in Altair? Ren opened her mouth, but no sound came out. She might have been a liar, but she could not lie to her family. Rita nodded.
Do you think they will welcome us under that mountain any better?
You do have to come to Durandir, Ren.
Brenora's words spun Ren's head back around to face her.
No. Please.
The queen cleared her throat and leaned forward, forearms resting on the table, eyes looking past Ren to Rita.
You and your family may do what you like, ma'am, but Ren, we are going back to Durandir.
No,
Ren said, as Rita came to stand behind her chair. It was a denial of the facts, not a refusal. She could no longer refuse.
I could serve you here. Having a servant, a spy, in White Silver would be very beneficial.
Ren is our family,
Rita said,
hands resting possessively on her shoulders. You can't take her, Honor growled.
I understand that, Brenora said, holding up a hand. But, you see,
if you stay here, they will use you,
Trevok interjected, leaning forward to grip the edge of the table.
They want to use you to entrap Zithril to gain control of Altair. At least, that is what I think they are doing.
Rin blinked at the man, unable to speak, to think. The only thing she could understand was she was being ripped away from the only safety she had ever known.
That is why we did the binding. We needed to give you a path out of Whitesilver,
he said, holding her gaze and refusing to let go.
Besides, if you come with us, if we do this right, he, Nizel, I mean, might follow you to Durandir and leave them alone. By leaving, you could keep them safe.
Give me a path out of Whitesilver, Rin numbly repeated. To set me free, you chose to trap me. He looked away at last, licking his lips and studying his hands pressed against the table.
We are sorry.
None of us truly understood. He trailed off, mimicking his queen. None of them could say it. None of them could look at her and admit that they had made a choice for her without ever stopping to consider the consequences of that choice. Rin sank into the embrace of her family, and as she sat in a tangle of limbs and hair and feelings, she felt a war start in Brenora. She had thought that she would never forget the feeling of being bound, of her will and agency being tethered to another's desires. However, as she ran across the roofs of Whitesilver, it became abundantly clear how much she had forgotten. Brenora's wants were a lead weight in her mind, rolling from side to side, making Rin dizzy, throwing off her balance as she ran. The dizzy, lurching tug of war in Rin's head began again as Brenora sat and stewed across the table. Her call to action and want for change, fighting against the obligation to rest and move forward. The frustrations, the rage, the hatred, and something else, a thought all too familiar to Rin, wrapped in Brenora's fear and hiding behind her larger emotions. Tentatively, Rin reached a mental hand for that thought, but she could only stretch so far. She felt pinned in, crushed under the weight of her own despair. But she had to know. She had to know what that thought was. Rin closed her eyes and breathed. Then she reached forward again, stretching the small and shaking fingers of her mind as far as they would go, past Brenora's rage and her fear, till at last they found the thought hiding at their center. You're trapped, Rin whispered, eyes blinking open. She had barely mouthed the words. Still, Brenora's eyes shot to hers, and Rin knew that she was right.
Enough of this,
Brenora growled, snatching a knife from her belt and passing the hilt to Rin as she rolled up her sleeve.
Lieutenant, draw us a square.
Rin vacantly stared at the blade as she heard Trevok start to argue.
Your Majesty, what are you doing?
I do not need to explain myself to you, Lieutenant, Brenora said, without looking back at the wizard.
You cannot mean to enter into a binding, an undocumented, undefined binding.
Draw the square, Lieutenant.
Your Majesty,
he pleaded as he stumbled around the table.
Think about this before you act. If you are bound to her and she is ever captured,
I am a queen, Trevok. I will not be made into a slaver.
Brenora thundered with such force that even Seraphina flinched away from her friend. Trevok's mouth dropped open, but it was Rin who spoke.
I do not have anything. To mark you with, I mean. No symbol or anything connected with my name.
A gasp went up from the children crowded around her knees.
Yes, you do, they whispered, followed by, Faith, get it, get it.
At 12 years old, Faith was the spinning image of her mother, and she had always been the type of child that took her role as eldest daughter very seriously. It was a necessary thing.
Faith's role in the family. However, as Faith stood in front of her, it broke Rin's heart how much older she looked and how eager she was to step into adulthood.
"We have something for you,"
Faith said, as Honor stepped forward and placed a wad of paper in Rin's hands.
"It was going to be a New Year's present, but, well, you might not be here for New Year's, and..."
She trailed off, unable to finish the sentence. Rin held the gift that had been pressed into her hand as 12 sets of excited eyes waited for her reaction. It was light, whatever it was, barely heavier than the paper it had been wrapped in. She pinched the package, trying to discern the shape of the object within.
"Stop trying to guess and just open it," Integrity shouted,
and the small, impatient mob murmured their agreement. Rin smiled and rolled her eyes, pulling back the paper to reveal a pendant. It was a square, slightly smaller than the palm of her hand, made of gray driftwood that had been buffed smooth, its sharp points sanded into gentle curves. It had been carved into the square spiral that was the Dimmick symbol for water and the sea, silver color wire outlining the waves as 12 colorful pieces of glass were pressed flat with the wood.
"Mommy's the water and we're the fish,"
squeaked Dream as the 5-year-old pushed his way onto Rin's lap, thrusting a scarlet finger at one of the glistening red dots.
"That one's me."
"Love and joy carved it," Honor said, nodding at the twins. "But we had to get the jeweler to help us with the setting, the glass, and the metal inlay," Faith added. Something about the way Faith said the word inlay turned Ren's throat hot. She said it like she was young and smart and had just learned a new word and she was proud to show it off. How many more words would this girl master before Rin saw her again?
"It's not finished,"
Love said, pointing to a hole at the bottom of the square, just behind the school of jeweled fish, the small wires crisscrossing over the gap in the wood. "We wanted to put a cat there, but we couldn't find a bead that we liked, and nothing we whittled felt right." Rin tenderly ran her finger over the pendant, tracing the soft grain of the wood, brushing over the bumps of the glass.
"A cat amongst fish?"
she whispered, the question sticking in her throat. Heads nodded, and tiny arms squeezed around her neck as the children pressed in around her. Her eyes had started to sting, and she could feel her nose starting to drip. Rin sniffed as she threw up a hand and grabbed for the knife.
"Oh, I have just the thing."
She rested her unmarked wrist on the table and felt the pressure of the rope bracelet for the last time. The knife slid through the twine with a slight snap, and then she was free. She felt its absence instantly. After years of scratching and pulling, it was gone, replaced by air and nothing. Rin picked up the rope, stiff with dirt and history, as she worked and wiggled the glass bead free. She took the bead and the pendant, gently prying and pushing the two together, till the sapphire glass sat safely nestled in the hole, held in place by the wires running over the spiral.
"There, it fits perfectly,"
Rin said, picking up her scrap of rope and unraveling the strands, forcing a smile as she did.
"Now, I do not have anything to give you, so I will have to owe you," she said,
moving to face the small army of children that were surrounding her with 12 thin threads in her hand.
"I promise you," she went on, tying small ropes around small wrists. "When I get back, I will get you anything you want. Any dress or book or toy, any school you want to go to or place you want to see will be yours. Won't it?"
Rin turned away from the children to face Brenora. The queen's eyes were shining.
"You will have funds. They will be taken care of."
Rin nodded and looked back at her family, at the horde of love and bodies around her, and found Rita's gaze.
I don't want to leave you, Rin croaked. And before she could even blink, Rita was kneeling in front of her, pulling her into an embrace, weeping into her hair. Everyone fell together, sobbing, their voices a jumble of Dimmock and Manon, fears and apologies as they clung to one another, falling to the floor.
What will we do when you are gone? How can I do this? How can I leave? I am so scared. I have failed you.
Shh, no. That is not true. That will never be true.
Rin pulled back and looked up at Rita, who cradled her young ward's chin and wiped tears away from her cheek with fingers as swift as butterfly wings.
We claim you, Jato. You are ours, no matter where you go or who has marked you.
Are you ready? Brenor asked, extending her hand to Rin. Rin blinked silently at the queen for a few moments before untangling herself from the mass of arms and legs on the floor. Not your wrist. It'll be too visible. I don't care if it's visible. I don't care who knows. You should care, Rin replied, her tone turning reverent, almost against her will. What you are doing here is dangerous, not just for you and me, but for your people as well. The less who know you carry a mark, the better. Brenora bit the side of her cheek, turning Ren's warning over in her mind. After a moment, Rin said, open your shirt. After I say my bit, place my hand in between your breast and shoulder and hold it there as you take your vow. It is an easy enough spot to keep hidden. The queen nodded and undid the fastenings of her blouse as Rin slit open her palm. The knife was too sharp for her to feel the sting. She pressed the wood into the cut. Her skin split like torn paper as blood seeped into the wood, making it slip like soap over her hand, changing the color from a dead ash to a deep, living wood. Rin did not need Trevok's help remembering the words for the binding. Certain words a person never forgets, and these words had been written in her mind and on her skin more than once.
I, Rin, Clara, Lefay, give you my full name and offer you the opportunity that comes through loyalty. You rise as I rise.
Power built in her chest and rushed down her arm, pooling in the center of her hand like liquid sunlight. Brenora gently guided Rin's hand over her chest and pushed down. Energy shot out of her and into the queen, through both of them. Rin had been expecting heat and fire. After all, that's what a brand was. But there was no fire here. There was only lightning, welding them together, permanently carving a space for Brenora in the back of Rin's mind. The queen did not balk at the pain Rin knew she must be feeling. She did not tremble or back away. She leaned into Ren's hand and held her gaze steady as she said her part of the ceremony. They were not the official words. This promise could not be found in any historical text or spellbook. But they were the words Brenora meant, and Rin knew with absolute certainty that they were the words that needed to be spoken now.
I, Brenora Amethyst Stonebreaker, give you my full name, my loyalty, my service, and this treaty. Your people will be our people. Their burden will be our burden. Their fight will be our fight. As they rise, we shall rise.
Thunder rushed through Rin's head, and the boards bucked beneath her feet. She pulled her hand away and stumbled back from Brenora, crashing into the edge of the table and falling to the floor. The room spun as she stared up at the ceiling, knowing history had just been changed, certain that the world could feel the impact of what had just happened. However, it was oddly quiet outside the four walls of their home. Power vibrated through the room, making Rin's teeth chatter, and the dogs slept on. The two women looked at each other, one sprawled backwards on the floor, the other clawing at the boards with an open shirt, and they both started to laugh. Seraphina rushed forward to help Brenora to her feet, and Rita grabbed Rin by the elbow, and still the two women cackled. The grief
the terror, the uncertainty, the awe of what they had both just done rushed out of both of them in fits of giggles. And it was both of them, Rin realized. She could feel Brenora in the back of her mind, feel the weight of the crown on her head and the kingdom on her back, feel how sure she was of all her decisions and how uncertain she was of all of her choices. She could feel her there, sharing the weight of Rin's heartbreak, both of them shouldering the pain of their pasts. They smiled at each other, and Rin knew she was no longer alone.
You have been listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston. And if you want to continue listening, that option is now available to you. Thought Thief is now available as an audiobook for free to all patron subscribers, as well as for purchase on all major listening platforms. Thought Thief is also available in paperback and ebook. Links to where you can purchase all of these things can be found in the episode description below and on my website, kepreston.net. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving us a review or even sharing this with a friend. Thought Thief is recorded and edited by me, K.E. Preston, with editing help from Hanson Lyman and Mark Gardner. Thought Thief is a work of fiction by K.E. Preston, with developmental editing and linguistics help from Amanda Berry. Thought Thief is a Lit Lab production. Thank you for listening.